Welcome aboard the Sailing Souls podcast, where we navigate the unpredictable seas of life's challenges and triumphs. I am your host, Charmaine Sibui, and together we'll embark on a journey of personal growth, resilience, and self-discovery. Join me as we set our course to explore inspiring stories, insightful conversations, and practical wisdom, all aimed at helping you navigate the storms and find your way to calmer waters. So, hoist the sails and let's set sail on this transformative voyage. Welcome to Sailing Souls Podcast. We're back at it again with another episode. Today, we're hosting a special guest, Kgotso Njikisibeko. And yeah, I'm very delighted to have you here on Sailing Souls Podcast, Kgotso.
No, I'm happy to be here, man. And I've been looking forward to this ever since we spoke about it the first time.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it too. So we'll just like get straight to it.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got started as a painter and an artist?
Well, like you said, my name is Njiki Kgotso Sibeko. I reside far east rand, Tsakana, Gelukdal.
Mm-hmm.
Funny story, how I got into art.
Yeah.
When I was very young, I think at the ages of around 4 to 6,
mm-hmm.
I had older brothers, 2 of them, and I spent a lot of time with them at that time. They were busy competing with one another, trying to see who could draw better. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So being at that age, obviously I couldn't draw that well. So I tried my best, but ever since seeing them compete with one another, I was drawn to art at that time. Then as time went by, primary school, I was encouraged to join some coloring competitions, which were held, I think, by Spurs. Then as time grew, I really got into it. I liked to draw, my guy, as a kid. I would draw cartoons during class. So my teachers now probably know why I wasn't doing that well. Like, I was always distracted in class.
Yeah, like I can tell that you had already found yourself, so you didn't really want to be distracted by other things.
Yeah, and it was my way just to be comfortable, my guy. So when I would draw, I knew for a fact that I was more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So then as time went by, I got into high school around grade 8, grade 9. I went to Wordsworth High School, really proper school at the time. They had some really proper teachers. Mm-hmm. And they really encouraged me to join art, my guy. And around grade 10, I auditioned. My teacher fell in love with my work and she really took me on. She showed me a type of mediums, the type of styles. I really got to learn about art rather than just the idea of what art is. The whole painting and just drawing.
I see. And it's good that you actually had support from the teachers, you know, because some teachers just want to focus on education, and most artistic and creative children don't really get that enough recognition and support from parents and teachers at school. So big ups to her. Shout out to her, actually, for,
supporting you. Shout out to my words with art teachers, my guy. They really did a good job with me.
No, I'm really glad. So next question, what influences or experiences have shaped your artistic style and how you express your art? Because I saw on your Instagram page, you have your signature name, which is the Black Barrett Boys. What also inspired that title?
A lot of people who don't know me don't know that I grew up in a tavern.
Yeah.
So growing up in that space, you get exposed to a lot of personalities, right?
Yes.
So eventually when I got old enough to recognize my style and recognize the type of art I want to create, I was conscious enough to understand my surroundings,
mm-hmm.
and try my best way to define them through my style. So Black Beret Boys derived from seeing all these men around, within and around my space.
Yes.
And in a way, I try to relate how I engage with my space. So for instance, materialism is represented through the badge, as you can see above the artwork. The badge is a symbol of materialism. a lot of guys around my space. I don't know, they feel some sense of pride in gaining or achieving some sort of materialistic object, whether it's expensive clothes, cars, money, drinks.
Yes, true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was one way to somewhat speak on that. If you could see, all my artworks have this type of nonchalant persona. It's as if they're sad or depressed or something.
Yes, I've noticed that, actually. I have.
This was in a way to somewhat speak on my artworks, how the men around me, or the men within my space, they have this manner of hiding or trying to put on a facade, whereas they don't want people to see their actual emotion, their actual feelings. They'd rather put on this facade, whereas if everything is going well. So that's where it derives.
Oh, okay, makes sense. Because I see your recent works touch on mental health struggles in your paintings, as you have stated that they have this sort of, you depict this sort of sad face mask thing that a lot of men portray in our society. Because as you know, men are taught and raised in a way that they're not allowed to, not even not allowed, but like, to express themselves and actually open up and show emotions. Like if we see a man crying, we all say, "Aye, he's weak."
That's thing, my guy. You always assume that a male, especially those who come across as very dominant, once they show that feminine side, whereas they cry or they express their emotion side, we consider them as weak.
Yes, that's true.
And to some extent, my guy, that's not really okay, because
not at all
true. Because if I'm going to hold back everything I feel, if I'm not going to talk about it to anyone close to me, to some extent that relationship gets affected by that.
True.
It makes, from what I understand, a lot of men who suffer from mental issues, whether or not they notice, they become distant in how they engage with people. So for instance, in relationships, you'd be insecure, you'd be most likely be aggressive because you were taught not to express yourself. And that being so, you've now harbored this type of personality where you have to, I don't know, express yourself in a physical way, express yourself in a very argumentative way.
Yes, that's true. I do hear you, because I mean, holding back emotions and bottling them up as a man is actually quite dangerous, because you find men out there who end up becoming abusive. Now we have to deal with GBV, and that's not a healthy way of coping with emotions, really, and mental health. Yes, and also just like expressing your emotions as a man.
And I believe this starts from a very young age. A lot of us deal with traumatic issues at a very young age, and we don't know how to deal with them at that age. So as we grow, we constantly decline in terms of dealing with conflicts and so forth. So in a relationship where one person is an introvert and one person is an extrovert, as a male, if my female is an extrovert, and in some way, as a child, I experienced some sort of things that didn't make me express myself. So when she does something that I feel is uncomfortable for me, I now want to respond to it in a negative manner instead of understanding where she comes from.
True, yes.
So I feel as if from a young age, not even when you're old, but from a young age, we should be taught, or at least be allowed, to express ourselves. So that when we grow up, I think it allows us to know how we feel and express how we feel.
True. So, yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, hey? I like the fact that you've mentioned relationships, because I feel like a lot of us jump into relationships without considering the other party's background and what could be influencing the way we behave. You know, also another problem that we face that I'd like to bring to the listeners' attention is the absent father conversation that impacts a lot of us. You know, I'm also someone who's been raised by a single mother. I don't know about your background, but I would also like for you to maybe share that with us.
How can I put this? There's an interview I watched Some time ago.
Yes.
The guy says when sons, the relationship between a father and a son, it has three stages.
Yes.
The son at a young stage would most likely idolize his father. Beginning of, in the middle of the stage, he would dehumanize his father. So he wouldn't really understand most of his father's decisions, right?
Yes.
So then the third one is when he would now understand where the dad is coming from, because now they've both reached that plateau where the grown-ups, the both of us now.
Yes.
So what I've come to understand, a lot of people who don't have their fathers, or a lot of men who don't have their fathers, or a positive role model, so say.
Yes.
I think it really forces them to consider everything from a female's perspective. So I'm not even allowed. I don't see the interaction of a male and a female in that manner. Whereas there's a father and there's a mother in the house. The mother does this, this. The father does this and this. So when you only have the mother's perspective or the mother's mentality, it doesn't allow you to really tap in into your masculine side and understand it to a certain extent and how to use it properly.
True.
Because from how I understand it, like gents who become physical or verbal abuse.
Yes.
You saw a negative role model from a man's perspective that didn't depict the positive side of masculinity, where you have to be protective, you have to be encouraging, you have to be supportive. Instead, you saw the one, that role model or that male figure where he would treat females in a certain manner that wasn't really positive. It wasn't really protective and it wasn't really supportive.
Yes, that's true.
So when you have a male, it allows you at least to see both sides and how that dynamic works. Rather from seeing it one-sided, that becomes biased.
Yeah, I do agree with you, because as you mentioned, if someone is exposed to only having just one parent in the household, that just gives you a limited perspective. And some of us don't get to explore the masculine side of it, you know. Mm. So I do agree with your statement on that one.
Because I was also watching this, I think it was a documentary on how to destroy black boys. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with surrounding young boys with females only. And what that does, at least from how I understand it, to some extent when you grow up as a male, I think or I believe your mentality becomes over-sexualized, because all you have around you is females, whether it's at school, your teachers are females, your friends are females, you have your moms, your aunts, your mother's side, which are females, whereas from your father's side or the male side, it's quite less. So you don't get to see that positive side of males.
Yo, I like the fact that you mentioned the fact that men, after being exposed to so much women, they end up sexualizing women. Because, I mean, that's something we're dealing with in our society and generation these days, you know, yeah. How sometimes men don't even know how to be a gentleman anymore, you know. it just shows in how they approach and communicate with women.
Mm, because to some extent, what you consume is what you are. So if everything you consume reflects around women, most likely every decision you make reflects around women. So how do you dress, how you speak, how you interact, what type of relationship you have?
Okay, so yeah, that really makes a lot of sense if you put it that way. And moving to the next question, can you share a specific piece of yours that addresses mental health? And just like help us, you know, discuss how its creation has been for you and its meaning. Is there a specific piece of yours that you've painted that?
Yeah, it's the one who's sitting. Yeah, it's the one above me right now.
The one above you right now. Yeah, I'll just share it on Instagram and other platforms.
Yeah, the title Translating, you won't see them coming down my eyes, which I'm referencing to tears.
Yes.
So this artwork mainly speaks on that facade that a lot of men want to put on, whereas you don't want to seem or you don't want to come off as vulnerable, whereas you are going through something that's difficult or weighing on you.
Yes.
I created this piece early last year, if I'm correct. Very early last year.
Mm-hmm.
And part of creating it, I was, I think a few months ago, a few months before I created the artwork, my grandma had just died.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. And may her soul rest in peace.
Hey, my gosh, she's watching over me right now, so that's a good thing.
You've gained a guardian angel for sure.
Thank you. So, yeah, she shortly just passed. The following day, just hearing the news, I was going to an interview somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so going to that interview, I had to put on the facade where I'm feeling some type of way, but I don't want people to see it.
Yes.
And funny enough, it backfired because after that interview, I didn't get accepted because of how I came off. I came off, well, I asked one of the people who were interviewing me, and I asked what was the main issue. And one of them was open enough to say, yo, you came off as arrogant.
Oh.
And that's how this came about, whereas that facade ended up backfiring instead of helping me.
So I'm assuming with how you mentioned the mask that a lot of men put on, and the facades. So I see that that is something that also blocks us from reaching our full potential, you see?
Yeah. Because you don't allow yourself to go through certain things. You decline it. So in declining them, you hinder yourself from growing, basically, from evolving. So once you decline yourself, or you should reject the idea of feeling pain, feeling sad, feeling happy, feeling joy. Once you decline yourself from feeling that, I feel as if you're declining from actually growing as a person.
Mm.
And a lot of my paintings, it's coming from how I see it and how someone else would see it. So I try to use the narrative of a relationship. So if you're in a relationship and you don't want to express something, or you shy away from conflict.
Yes.
Essentially what you're doing is rejecting the idea of growing within that relationship and growing as an individual.
That's true.
So you won't see them coming down my eyes. It's something a lot of guys are really struggling with, instead of understanding that crying is not really an issue. Like, if you want to cry, cry. Like, it's fine. You all cry.
It's true. I mean, we have to release those emotions. But there's this pride that men have in them that, hi, ngege, I'm not going to cry in front of my heart, except, you know.
Funny enough, can I tell you when I became comfortable with crying?
Yes, sure. Open up.
A few years ago, me and my nieces were watching The Batman Holiday as soon as it released.
Oh, I'm not quite aware of it, but I'll check it out after now that you've mentioned it.
I'm sure you know the movie, The Best Man, the one with Maurice Chestnut and whatnot.
No, I don't, actually. But the title sounds familiar. I have to check it out.
So the first time I watched that, before the ending, Maurice Chestnut's wife has cancer, and she's been hiding that from everyone. Up until Christmas Eve, she falls down and everyone could see that she's sick. And throughout the end, it's basically them trying to cope with the fact that she might die within a few days.
Yes.
And that scene made me cry. And from that moment on, I was okay with crying.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful to hear that also your nieces also got to see umalume being vulnerable, you know. So next thing, when they are in relationships, as they grow, they won't see it as like a shocking thing when their partners start crying. I'm glad that you've been a great example to them, and as a man, you have opened up about your experiences with being vulnerable. I think a lot of men in our society have to learn from this, you know.
Yeah.
because
I'm fortunate enough to surround myself with people who are comfortable with who they are. They are comfortable with feeling the way they feel. So my friends don't shy away from actually being emotional in front of me or around me.
That's a good quality to have. I mean, you are now a safe space for the gents also, and they also get to learn from you on how to be vulnerable as a man and how to express their feelings and emotions. So shout out to you. I actually admire that quality that you have.
Shout out to me.
No, shout out. So as an artist, how do you believe art can contribute to raising awareness and understanding of mental health issues?
I personally believe a lot of people are drawn to different outlets. So I think a lot of people would reject the idea of having a medical personnel come to them and tell them or advise them about mental health. That reach is not the same. So a person at my age, having to speak with someone in their late 40s telling me about what mental health is, it doesn't come across as relatable because you're at a different age than I am. You're experiencing different generation, like I would, experiencing different spaces, environments, so forth and so on. So an outlet like art, an outlet like fashion or music, I feel as if those outlets make it easier for our generation more than anything to actually seek out and actually create that, have that conversation of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of us want to have a conversation with our peers and in a relatable manner.
True.
So for me, art, I feel as if it's one outlet a lot of people are drawn to. So me creating an art piece that looks nice, to some extent it might, for instance, you allow you to try and gain more information on mental health. You understand?
Yes, I do understand.
So I think it's based on the outlet. It might not be just art. It might be fashion. It might be music. Because how I got into this, there's an artist named Samurai Farai. I think 2-3 years ago, he's the one who came about this. So I'm fortunate enough, one, to gain that knowledge from him. Two, to actually take it upon myself to research on how to or how it works with mental health, not just romanticize the idea of feeling depressed and whatnot, but actually get to know what goes about it. Why would I feel some type of way? What triggers me to feel some type of way?
Oh, yes.
So art, man, I think it's a really proper outlet for me and a lot of people to at least get that type of information out there. Because I personally believe a lot of LGBTQ people have been exposed to information through fashion, music, and art.
True, yes.
What type of outlet would you, or how did you come about to be this knowledge about mental health?
For me, I'm someone who has experienced mental health problems on my side. So starting out, I would just find myself reading books, and social media, especially Twitter, which is now X, also helped me to, you know, learn from other people on how they have their own different outlets. What I used to do, which wasn't healthy, was that I used to bottle up a lot of my emotions and just listen to music all the time. And it wasn't healthy because I could see that, no, man, this thing is actually eating me up. It's consuming me. So I'd always have this anger outbursts. Yeah. And since I couldn't open up to people because I have a tendency of having trust issues, I started writing. So for me, I'm a writer, the poetic side of writing. So that's when I would like express my feelings through my writing. I would bleed through the ink on the paper, or if I'm just like typing it out on my notes app. That's how I would cope with it. And I started talking to people. So when I started this podcast, that's when I actually wanted to learn from other people such as you and other people that I've interviewed before. and actually see other people's perspectives and not keep a limited perspective on how I approach, how I have an outlet and how I deal with my mental health issues. So that's how I came about it. And the podcast has helped me because I learned from other people, and the listeners also learn from the people I get to host on this platform. And I've learned a lot from other people. And, you know, sometimes I go into spaces where we meet up with people and we discuss a lot of topics, especially dealing around spirituality. Some people are religious, and we share our own experiences, and that's how I get to learn from them. So with you, do you have any other form of outlets to dealing with, you know, mental health other than just like painting and expressing yourself through your art?
I work out. Got into working out lately, and it's really helped. It allows me to really release that type of stress I have.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, sorry,
what I'm taking from what you just said, you and I and a lot of people have the same thing in common based on how we engage with mental health. So what I understand, we bottle things up and romanticize the idea of I'm feeling depressed by actually, listening to music that plays a role in us feeling some type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand a lot of people romanticize the idea of having a mental issue rather than actually engaging and seeking help rather than dealing with it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because nowadays, I mean, as much as we like putting humor in a lot of problems we face, I think we're getting comfortable, as you said, with mental health. We have this tendency of posting, oh, I'm struggling with anxiety, and we joke about it without wanting to approach the problem. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm also guilty actually, because it's not healthy. Hey, it's not healthy.
A lot of us are. I have friends who also tend to put on a facade, whereas they portray themselves as being in a good space, whereas you'd end up posting or implying that you're not really good. But then again, if I were to come and ask you, are you good or are you coping? You say, yeah, I'm fine. Which is keyword for no, that I'm breaking down.
We still have a long way to go with this mental health stigma that we have in our society, you know. It's really sad because, I mean, another thing I've witnessed was someone who was a student committing suicide, and it was a boy. This might sound too graphic, but he jumped from the highest floor in his building, and we all witnessed that. And that actually tore me apart, because it was traumatic to witness that a lot of us end up resorting to suicide, which is actually not a solution at all, you know?
Yeah. So, and we like to think as if mental health derives from places such as township and whatnot. It really is around us all.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Because in my space, in my environment, there's a school close by where 5 kids last year actually committed suicide. 3 of them attempted.
Oh, wow.
So just hearing about that last year, it made me feel some type of way. That also our environment really plays a huge role in us feeling some type of way.
Yeah, that's true. An environment also does contribute. And I wish schools could at least, you know, provide support, because I know not everyone has access to psychologists and, you know, therapists whatsoever that can actually help with mental health.
But we're getting there, my guy. I mean, this conversation we're having, it's a step towards the right direction, I think.
Yeah, it really is. We're also just, you know, contributing our own experiences and knowledge to the listeners also.
So I think at least, I believe our generation is attempting to do something about it.
Yeah, that's true. So have you encountered any challenges or resistance in addressing mental health themes in your art?
Yeah. I'd like to think I have.
And may you please share those?
Because like I said, based on my outbreaks, a lot of them come off as if it's a very depressing scene, right?
Yes.
Whereas mental health is not really about being depressed, but rather struggling with your emotions and expressing them. So with me, I think my biggest issue was how do I make my mental health struggle relatable with other people's mental health struggle? Because we differ. But in some type of way, our common denominator is that we're struggling with how we're expressing ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, so at the moment, I think I'm trying to deal with it. I'm not where I want to be with it, but I'm really trying my best to try and define my issues in the best way and most relatable way to other people.
Okay, and that's also a good thing. So, yeah, I'm proud of you for that.
Because I don't want my artworks to come from a very biased side, whereas I'm only speaking about my issues. For instance, there's a series I just began a couple of months ago. The series is titled "Alternative Films," translated "Love That Hurts."
Mm-hmm.
So I feel as if the best way to define what I'm struggling with mentally is that, in a way, a lot of relationships that I've had in the past were very toxic for me or towards me.
Yes.
Yeah, so trying to define a very toxic relationship, whereas you're still within that relationship, it's difficult because I feel as if a lot of us are in that type of situation, whereas we're involved with people, we have these relationships where we don't really benefit, but we still remain in those relationships.
Yeah, I can also relate to that.
Yeah. So that's my biggest issue right now. You're trying to create work that's relatable rather than biased or just defining my side.
Okay, that's good. So are there any themes that you're considering other than just painting artwork that conveys messages about mental health?
Around that topic, I'd say I'm trying to tell really my surroundings or the surroundings of Black people within one another. So not only is mental health, but I'm trying to tell the story of Black people, good or bad.
Oh, okay. That's also a good one, you know?
Yeah.
Because, with the Black community, there's just so much to unpack.
Yeah. Hence why I think it's important to tell those stories in a positive manner or in the most relatable manner rather than trying to glamorize it or trying to make it look interesting for gallery purposes.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I feel it's important for me and a lot of Black artists to really define Black people in a very realistic manner. I don't want to say positive because by saying positive, I'm not embracing the negative side.
Yes.
Yeah, so when I say realistic, I'm basically saying telling a story of a Black person in its most realistic form, whether it's positive or negative, how I put it out there and how you take it. That's on you, my guy.
Yeah, that's true. Because, I mean, perspective is subjective after all.
Yeah.
We as people don't perceive things the same way. Someone can look at your art and have a different interpretation of it than what you had initially decided for that piece of art that you had painted. So do you like take some of those things from the people who come to view your art and discuss with them what they receive on their receiving end when they look at your art?
Yeah, I think from an artist's perspective, it's really important to get the audience's response and really digest it and use it to your benefit. So for instance, I had someone come through the other day and come see my work, and she defined each and every artwork based on emotion. So she would say, this one seems soft, this one seems like the strong guy in the group, This one seems very emotional. This one seems like he's about to cry. And I like the way she explained my output because she didn't try and overcomplicate it by saying, oh, she's looking that way, she's doing that. She just looked at them and said, by looking at this, this face is giving this type of feeling. This face is giving that type of feeling.
Mm. And she sounds like someone who has an interest in art.
Yeah, she does.
Okay, no, that's similar to you. Yeah, same. Oh, I love art. And yeah, you know me, so yeah, I'm a huge fan of art. It's quite therapeutic, you know. For me, it helps me with my mental health, you know. Just going out there and indulging in art for me just makes me feel better, because I also wanna go into drawing and painting as a hobby. Yeah. So, I mean, I do go out there and learn from other artists too. So another question I wanted to ask you is, you know, each and every artist has their own material and that they use. So what do you use for your art? Like, as you know, some artists can use charcoal, some use fire, some use sketching, whatsoever. With yours, what do you use?
This goes back to my high school days. Like, I shout out to my teachers.
Shout out to them.
I'm very diverse within my approach. I use charcoal, I use acrylic, I use oil. I'm very diverse when it comes to my approach. Cause I really try my best to learn a lot of things. So when I try and do an artwork, I try to experiment something I've never done before. So I try to use different color combinations. I try to use oil and acrylic together. I try and use pastel and acrylic, spray paint, for instance, something I'm not as familiar with as of yet, but I'm really trying, and yeah, man, I'm making progress.
No, that's good. I'm glad you're exploring other methods, you know, and you're not just sticking to one type of method when it comes to your artwork. So I believe that's a good thing. Have you collaborated with other artists, or you've just been working independently so far?
So far, it's independently, but I would love to work with Thabiso Takamela. I feel as if his work is relatable to mine. He's someone that really influences me. Him and Wanda Buse, they're really influential when it comes to my artworks.
Oh, yes, I've heard of Thabiso, actually. I've seen some of his works.
Yeah, shout out to Thabiso, my guy. His works are really proper. There's an artwork of mine, the small one. I'll show you. I'll send you which one I'm talking about. I actually painted that work at his studio. I was fortunate enough for him to open his studios up to me.
Thanks to him for that. That's quite generous of him.
Oh my God, it was helpful enough because it allowed me to even see his works in life. I got to see him actually do his work, and his approach to his work, my guy, was really interesting because it was free-flowing. I tend to overthink my work and how I want it to look because I'm someone who doesn't draw first or create a rough draft and then do the actual work. I just create what I see in my mind. So for me to see him actually do his work right then and there, it was really interesting, my guy.
No, that's some proper stuff. That is some proper stuff. And I believe that you'll still be meeting more artists that you'll do collabs with. I mean, this is just the beginning. So there's still a lot more ahead for you. And I mean, we're starting now. You'll be more exposed to the listeners. They'll get to see your work. And we are for sure going to post your work on the Sailing Souls podcast profile on Instagram. So they can see, because I mean, as much as we're mentioning it, and this is not a visual podcast, but they will have access to see your artwork.
I'm really, in terms of the message, I'm really trying to do my best, my God, to contribute to the cause. I feel as if it's a very important subject to touch on. And it's only fair that not only do I contribute by creating, but actually allowing my work to play an actual part in such a matter. So for instance, your podcast, I really like what you're doing with your podcast, my guy.
Thank you so much. I try, hey?
No, I keep on doing that, my guy.
No, I'm gonna keep working on that, and you know, it also helps me a lot and the listeners too, because I mean, we get to learn a lot from you guys too, you know, and not just, like I said, keep a limited perspective and just focus on one thing. No, yeah. There's so much out there to discuss other than just like mental health. As artists also, you guys have stories, you guys have backgrounds that people don't actually pay attention to, because people just focus on the art and not on the artists. And I feel like a lot has to be exposed other than just going to an art gallery or seeing an artist's work on social media platforms. I feel like we also need to get to know you guys to understand how you guys express yourselves through your artwork.
Yeah, and you know what I find most annoying about people who create other people's work?
Oh, yes.
You're essentially recreating someone's stories based on your narrative without having the actual background story of what you're creating.
That's a problem we deal with in the society, because I mean, some people have, especially artists, there's this rumor that they tend to steal other artists' you know, signature moves or ways of expressing themselves, because people also, they don't want to credit the origin story or the, you know,
The original creator
also. And yeah, it really is annoying, because someone can just steal your work and just claim it as their own.
And you're really taking away from the actual story. That's my thing that annoys me the most, because a lot of artists' story derives from way, way back. So for instance, a lot of us might probably know Nelson Makamu or Tabiso Takamelo in this age, but chances are most of his artworks derive from when he was a child, and we don't know those backstories. So when you have someone who creates his work, you're taking away from that backstory.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, that's my only constraint. But this country, man, I think we're really growing, my man. We're really growing.
Yeah, we really are. I think we're bouncing back from COVID. I think we're slowly bouncing back, actually.
But what I like to see is a lot of established artists at least reaching out and offering some form of advice, more than anything, on how to move within this industry. Because a lot of us, we just have the understanding that I paint, I put it out there, someone's going to buy it, which is actually the opposite of what happens in the art industry.
Yeah, because I think a lot of us are actually not well informed. We just think, oh, it's really about you guys just painting and selling. That's where it ends with most of us, the consumers of the art.
So I think a lot of established artists, a lot of established houses such as August House. I know August House does have initiatives where they allow artists to come through and get some form of knowledge, which is a proper thing. But I would like to see it from established artists, where they actually put out that information of how to actually successfully move within the industry.
No, it will get there as long as a lot of other people are expressing this need for that kind of... What word would I use for this? But like, just for them to share and also give other people, you know, a way to, you know, establish themselves, and not just having August House being the only place where artists can get that. But I think we're slowly going to get there, because a lot of these people are now starting to, you know, open up and not just gatekeep, because there's a lot of gatekeeping in the industry. A lot.
And also, I think what I'd advise most artists is to try and most likely understand your journey so you can best describe it or best create work from it. So as you grow with your audience. It allows you to move at your pace. You know, you don't have to force people to your stuff, or you don't have to force yourself to people.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was a great chat, you know. It was great having you here. And I have one last question, you know. Like, what encouraging words and motivational messages do you have for any upcoming artists out there, or any other person who's in a different niche but wants to start out, you know, because a lot of people have this fear that, oh, I'm scared people might not like what I'm doing. Yeah. Or, you know, we just all have the self-doubt. Also with me, when I started this podcast, I was very doubtful. I didn't think people would reach out. I thought people would just be like, what is this person doing? We're not interested in this. But looking back at where I started and where I am now, I'm realizing that actually, you know, I'm here now. So on your end, you know, what encouraging words and motivational messages do you have for the listeners and anyone out there who's starting out?
I'm going to quote someone who advised me last year. This was Fatwan. What Fatwan said, I had the same feeling which you had, whereas I don't feel as if my work is reaching enough people for me to succeed. Yes. And what Fatwan advised me was, just put out the work, create and put it out. Whatever people perceive of the work, that's not for you to make out of it. As long as you put out the work, people will perceive the work, whichever way they want to perceive the work.
True, yes.
And then the second one, I'd say, I think, and this is the most important one, do not be afraid to fail, my guy. I think failing is the most powerful feeling ever.
Yeah, true, actually.
A lot of us are really afraid to fail. A lot of us are really afraid to try. And that's one thing that hinders a lot of people from actually knowing what lies beyond the tunnel.
Yeah,
so a lot of us, we just get scared, my guy. We just enter that tunnel, we see a dark space, and we tell ourselves there's no getting out of this. Whereas you encourage yourself to go through that dark space, my guy, because at the end of the tunnel, there is light at the end of the day.
Most definitely.
There's no way you can create work and there's no outcome of it.
Yeah, that's true. I do agree with you. Because, I mean, with social media, a lot of people just show us the success story and they don't show us the parts where they failed. So people feel like failing is the end of the world, you know?
And it's really not. I feel as if that's when you really know if you want to succeed, you want to achieve what you want to achieve. Because if you're not willing to... How can I put it? If you're not willing to meet that or come across that barrier, you're not really intentional in coming across and jumping over that barrier.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
You want to romanticize the idea of, oh, I tried this and this didn't help. Oh, I tried so and so didn't help. Oh, I tried, but this and that. I feel as if that's just excuses for you to say, you know what, I tried.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas try, do it. And whether or not you reach what you want to reach, there's results for what you do.
Yes.
So for you right now, or for us doing this podcast, we might just be talking and having a conversation about mental health. But someone with the resources, someone with the access, might take this conversation further and do something much more.
Yes, that's true.
So it's just about doing something and put it out there. But do your own shit, man. Stop biting people's work, man. Fuck.
I know, right? It's just this fear of looking stupid, this fear of abantu bazothini that's holding us back as people. Yeah,
it's really fucking up.
Yeah, it really is messing us up as people. But hey, this was a great conversation, Koto, and I'm more than grateful and delighted to have had the opportunity to host you here on Sailing Soul Podcast. We are more than grateful and delighted as the sailors. I usually refer to my listeners as the sailors. To actually have you. Yes, now you're a sailor. Welcome to the family.
Y'all heard it, my guys. I'm a sailor now.
You see? So yeah, man, thank you so much. And yeah, you and I will be in touch to discuss, you know, the further details of this podcast.
Yeah.
And we'll just like wrap it up here.
No, I appreciate talking to you, my guy. This was a proper conversation.
Thank you. I also enjoyed it too. And take care.
Take care, man.
Bye. Thank you. As our voyage on the Sailing Souls podcast comes to a close, remember that even amidst life storms, you possess the strength to navigate through it. Keep sailing forward, embracing challenges as opportunities to grow. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations and stories that remind us all that we are capable of sailing through anything. Until next time, this is Charmaine Sibui signing off.